2019 work session, Metro Council work session. Councillor Chase is excused. I feel like we're missing. Oh, Christine. Christine is excused.
Testifying.
That's right. She's excused. All right. I will ask the councillor who is not here today to read the safety briefing, so I will do it. Please note that we are on the third floor of the building. In the event of a fire or fire alarm, please exit out through the door. Are you pointing?
Sorry. Okay. I'm putting in my ear.
Oh, no worries. In the event of a fire or fire alarm, please exit out through the door in the northeast corner of this room. Go down the steps to the second floor and exit through the main entrance by the reception desk. We will meet in the courtyard outside that entrance. In the event of a medical or fire emergency, please call 911 and notify the security agent at the front desk. The nearest defibrillator is mounted on the steps leading from the reception desk down to Grand Avenue, and a fire extinguisher is located in the corridor alongside the dais just behind the wall. All right, we'll queue up our regional investment strategy, transportation investment measure, as our first work session topic of the day. We have Andy Shaw to lead us through that conversation, and Margie Redway.
Thank you for having us this afternoon. So we want to use this time to largely talk about the transportation work, the task force work, and the tier one recommendations that staff made to the task force and sort of where that is. We can all bundle up in here to do that. We don't want to get ahead of the task force conversation. So as you recall, they're in the middle of their discussion about reacting to the staff recommendation and thinking about amendments to that and having their conversations. In fact, they meet tomorrow evening to continue that conversation. We'll move that into December. But we do want to be able to bring what we presented and some analysis of it and some overview so we can have this conversation with you on an iterative basis as we do with the task force. So, sorry, just a few reminders. You gave us direction almost a year ago to work with the task force appointed by the council to develop corridors and prioritize those corridors. We indeed, you remember that way back when? We indeed worked with the task force and with you to analyze all the places in the region that seemed important to analyze and came up with the tier one list of 13 corridors and a further tier two of about 16 corridors, as I recall. We worked over the summer intensely to get evaluation and examination of the projects in these 13 Tier 1 corridors, and then the task force spent time working on regional programs. You then gave us direction on narrowing to a set of 9 region-wide programs, which we will continue to analyze and work with engagement with community into the new year and into the February timeframe. And then are working to establish a process with you to come back and talk about how to stand up those 9 program areas and what the implications would be with various funding sources, et cetera. We plan to, later in the spring, ensure we've got the right oversight and accountability mechanisms and you're comfortable with those structures in a measure. And, of course, all of this is to advance regional policy that's established, the regional transportation plan, our plan to advance racial equity, our climate plan, and so on. Again, a reminder of where we are on the timeline. I just went through some of this. So the corridor prioritization was based on outcomes that you and the task force established for us early in last year. We worked hard on the region-wide programs during the summer. You can see that little box says local investment teams. It doesn't represent how much work folks did and all the tours that folks did along the way to understand these places and give evaluation of the projects. We're in the midst right now of this conversation with our task force about these 13 corridors and the projects and investments in those corridors. We will have 2 meetings, and we'll recover this, recount this again at the end, 2 meetings in December where we'll open up the discussion about the revenue tools we have at our disposal, how much they can raise, the legal limitations, legal uses, all those questions, as well as where we think the voters are in terms of support or lack of support for various revenue mechanisms. And we'll have another meeting where we're asking the task force to indeed forward recommendations to the Metro Council around the priority corridors and the projects in those corridors. Let's just jump ahead because you've seen the rest of this timeline before. You've also seen this. I think it's important to note, though, that you and the task force adopted a broad suite of outcomes and priorities that you'd like to see advanced in this measure. We'd like to come back to that because the conversation the task force is in the midst of, and you will be in the midst of in the months to come, is how do we advance these various outcomes and values with the investments that we're talking about making in all of these corridors? And there are times when you or the task force may judge one of these values to be of more importance to advance than another, and that's the conversation that we'll be in the midst of in the months to come. So we had a chance to...
Excuse me, can I ask a clear
question? Yeah.
Is the task force done with program analysis?
The task force did an evaluation process, and you then gave us direction. We will bring information back to the task force, but we're not expecting them to do a whole lot more deliberation. I think now the question is, on the one hand, as we move through the revenue conversation, how much can we afford? And on the other hand, how would we, sort of like you did in the parks discussion, what are the trade-offs for putting more emphasis on one program area versus another program area? How much do we get with X million dollars of investment in this program area versus that program area? So we want to do the work with community and with you, with experts, to develop that information so we can bring that to you later in the spring. And I think we're really looking for council to help give feedback and structure the program investments in the springtime on the way to referral.
Which would be another reason to lay the groundwork about revenue measures and their capacity.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So we had an opportunity to present at MPAC last week, and it was a moment to reflect on all the work that's been done and how it relates back to land use, MPAC being, of course, the Land Use Advisory Committee. So we reminded them of the plan they know so well, that you know so well, the 2040 plan adopted more than two decades ago, and our goal for intensifying growth in these key areas connected by corridors. And the work that they have, that the task force and you are doing around investing in these various corridors. So we thought it'd be useful to just take a look at where are the 13 Tier 1 corridors and how do they relate to that grand land use vision. So this is a map of just the Tier 1 corridors with the downtown node and the Albina node on there as well. They connect into the central city. That's the big dot in the middle. They also connect to a number of regional centers, places that we and local jurisdictions have identified as places we want to see people concentrate and jobs concentrate. They also connect to a number of town centers, which are all important main streets, important downtowns across the region. So the overall 18 town centers and regional centers connected by all of these corridors. And then you add on, it's a little hard to see on this map, but on your screens hopefully you can see the employment areas along corridors, and in some places these are larger tracts of targeted employment areas where either currently there's a lot of job growth or a lot of existing jobs, or there are places we hope to see job growth in the future. So you've seen a different version of this map. I think I've called it the octopus map. Yes?
I'm sorry, I thought Columbia Corridor was one of the corridors, no?
Columbia Corridor is a Tier 2 corridor.
Oh.
Which is?
The along the Columbia Corridor, along the north area.
It's a Tier 2.
Yes.
Okay.
So what was your question?
I thought it was a Tier 1 for some reason. That's okay.
Partly why we're trying to show just the 13, because the 13 layered on with the Tier 2 corridors gets a little confusing. So at any rate, you can see the map on the bottom is our analysis of where people that leave their home county to go to another county to work. And so people are moving all over the region, and that movement tracks pretty well with the 13 corridors that have been advanced by the task force and the council. So it was just a moment to reflect on, we're doing a really good job of actually identifying the places where people live and work and how they move around the region in advancing the set of corridors that we do have.
What does the little cross-hatching things indicate?
So those are where corridors go through employment areas.
Got it.
If you looked at the 2040 map, let's just go back real quick. It is the blue areas there, or commercial nodes that are identified as commercial nodes along those corridors.
Is there a reason why the entire industrial area isn't on there? Because it's huge?
It's a design question.
Okay. I just think it minimizes the impact by just having it right adjacent to and not the actual excess.
So you are, in a way, a beta test for this.
Okay.
And we've had the exact same conversation back in the back offices about, is that the best way to display this? You know, the Columbia Corridor up there is a very large blue area. So how much of that do you display? We could show greater areas, but you've gotten on to an important point, which is there are vast tracts of land where we expect growth, for example, at the south end of C2C and at the north end of C2C. There's a very large area up above the Tannisbourne Regional Center that's a regionally designated industrial area or an employment area connected by that north-south. It also, at the TriMet Board, when I presented last week, their chair pointed out this is connecting recent UGB expansions with employment areas to the north. So these are smart places to be focusing in on investment.
Yep.
All right.
So, give you an overview of the project recommendations and answer any questions. The part of my presentation is not to get into any specific projects, but if you want to talk about specific projects on corridors, of course we can. So, we often get asked, how were the draft project recommendations developed? And what we did, and when I use we, it was primarily Anthony, our project manager, who's not here, as well as our consultant team, in addition to many, many people from our project delivery agencies, our agency partners. We had several technical workshops that started 6 months ago. They ran parallel and complementary to the LIT process, as well as the task force process. We took the input from the task force, the LIT local investment teams, and we did what's called performance-based design, performance-based analysis. You may remember when Lake was here with me talking about our urban design guide and the big loop where we said, okay, first you start with the outcomes and you carry that all the way through design. So we really tried to use the outcomes identified by the LIT teams and by the task force and, of course, Metro Council as our North Star in the design process. We also took into account things that we found out through the technical workshop about risk and readiness. We'll have a more complete risk analysis after the project's been done, but there were some issues that we were able to quickly identify that leaned towards maybe not including a project because we felt at this point it was just not going to be ready enough or had enough risk associated with it. So of the total amount, we identified, if you remember the package and the way it came to you, so I'm just going to hold it up, the preliminary staff recommendations, we identified approximately $5 billion of need. From that need, we identified $3.11 billion that staff recommended for funding. That was on all of the corridors, so all of the corridors had projects within the corridors that we recommend for funding. We also identified federal funding, mostly, or other funds, sometimes say SDC charges or development system charges, of $2.13 billion for a total of $5.24 billion. So this was the recommendation that went to the task force. And just to be clear, it was a staff recommendation to get the task force thinking about what they wanted to recommend. And, of course, you will have the final recommendation. In the things I guess I wanted to highlight, I've got a few notes here, is we did include quite a bit of different types of projects, everything from project development to construction, but also some planning and corridor work. We found on several of the key corridors like McLaughlin and TV Highway that people really wanted us to do more corridor planning. A great example on McLaughlin is that there was genuine interest on the LIT team to see what it would take to extend the Orange Line. And there's lots of land use and economic development work that needs to be done. Really, it's Metro's bread and butter. So we put planning towards that. That was a LIT team recommendation to do that study work while we also made transit investments and enhanced transit corridors. So scope and scale of the projects was varied. Here, I just want to highlight a couple things about the package. We're proposing of the 3.11. It's of the 5.2, really, because we're including leveraged funds.
Yes.
So of the amount proposed with the leveraged funds, we're proposing $1.92 billion in transit. Overall, that's 975 hours of daily passenger delay saved. So that's hours saved. The investment in equity focus areas is $2.333 billion.
This is actually just of the
$3.11 billion proposed for, to go to the ballot.
To go to the ballot.
These numbers are of that amount.
Yes.
So we're not actually counting the leveraged funds in laying out these additional outcomes.
Correct. Okay. All right. So this is just of what we would fund. Okay. Thank you for clarification. Investment in safety, $1.06 million, addressing 20% of the region's serious crashes. Councilor Gonzalez, did you have...
Yes, just to clarify, when you mentioned leverage funds, can you give is that local, county?
Yeah, that's a great question. So in some cases, it's leveraged funds. For example, on 185th, Washington County is bringing funds to the table. Another example would be Portland Central City in Motion. They'd actually already received a RFA grant from us, and then they put $8 million, and they put $11 million of their own funds on it, and then we're layering on top of that. It also includes a few corridors where we believe we are likely to get a federal investment. 82nd is one where both TriMet and Metro feel confident that we're able to qualify for FTA funding for transit investments there. We did not do that on every corridor because that's a risky thing to do. 82nd was really the only one where we felt putting a decent amount, assuming a decent amount of federal match there. Most of the other federal match is secured.
So Southwest Corridor.
Southwest Corridor
is the big one.
Yeah.
So Southwest Corridor, the Burnside Bridge, where the county's identified a significant amount of funding, and 82nd are probably the three places that bring the bulk of that $2.1 billion in leveraged funding.
Yeah.
Okay. Another clarification question. You mentioned 82nd as a potential federal match opportunity.
Yes.
So,
under small starts.
Okay. So if we had a sufficient level of transit improvement that justifies describing it as...
So for 82nd, we've done a couple different things. There's four scenarios on the table to move for transit. The most kind of gold standard one would be kind of BRTA with a dedicated bus lane. The least treatment would be kind of more articulated buses pulling in and out, more like division.
Pulling in and out on division. They're
staying on division. They're staying on division, but not necessarily having dedicated lane all the way through, I think is the point I was trying to make. We're going to move all four scenarios forward because we really have to do a NEPA process if we're going to go through small starts, but we asked Nelson Nygaard, TriMet's consultant, to run kind of an initial warrant analysis for small start and came back really good. And so that's why we feel so confident, because we've already had a consultant look into it and kind of give us advice on how to move forward.
So I think the team is hopeful that we could actually eventually draw down federal funds for higher capacity transit on a number of these corridors, but Southwest Corridor and 82nd are the only two that we feel comfortable saying you could leverage these dollars with the dollars in the measure.
Just a question about units. Last one, investment in safety. Mm-hmm. That addressing the actual 20% of region's serious crashes or crash areas?
I believe that is crashes and not total high crash corridors, right? Is that the question you're asking?
I can see saying we're addressing a percentage of the area with high crash rates, but I don't think we can actually say that we can reduce...
Point taken.
20% of a generic amount of crashes because
throughout the region.
Yes. Well, and Anthony is not here, but
we don't know what kind of crashes, and we don't know.
There's
it just begs a bunch of other questions, mm-hmm. and I don't think that we'd be willing or be able to answer readily.
Well,
I think that's good.
I know the city of Portland has a pretty fine-grained set of information about where serious crashes involving fatality or injury occur.
So do we. We have the same data set. I think more is kind of how you couch how your improvement would potentially save lives. And there are the FHWA 11 countermeasures, and there's a methodology in there that says if you do this treatment, you're likely to reduce fatalities by this point. But I think we need to preface this properly so it reflects that kind of if you do this, then you're likely to reduce crashes in this area.
I think It says that we're addressing 20% of the region's serious crashes. Those serious crashes are individually based issues. And we're not dealing with the top 20% or whatever.
It's too generic.
Yes. To really mean anything. So, but to say high probability that we will reduce fatalities in the region by 10%. Is different.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Or 20%.
We'll work on that. Thank you. Good point. Okay. Oh, and I think the next slide also to me, and then again, just talking about how the corridors overlap with our equity map as defined in the RTP, which is defined by race, low income, and English as a second language. But as you can see, there's a high overlap there.
What'd you say the percentage was?
Oh, the three factors that go into the what we call our equity focus.
What was the percentage coverage?
The percentage coverage, I have it by number, not percent.
Okay.
I can get it by percent. I mean, you could take it's 2.3 billion, you divide the 3.11. I mean, that's two-thirds. Say two-thirds.
Yeah, I was just thinking, sorry.
But we can get that
talking point, too. The increase in accessibility within those areas because of,
We didn't slice the data that way for presentation.
Yeah.
We can.
We can.
Yes.
It's okay. Next time. With every iteration.
But part of what you're seeing is we are working towards, even while we're still building this package with you and the task force, we are working towards ways of describing the beneficial outcomes of some of the investments that are on the table.
Yep.
So we welcome your ongoing guidance about how to best do that.
Now
again, a little bit of a beta here.
I love the maps that are starting to emerge.
Yeah, and I love the tool, the online map tool thing with the clickies.
We've been showing that in some presentations, actually, just opening up the online map and clicking through some of the layers that you can pull up just to show people they can go in and do their own work to figure out where are the challenges in the region from air quality to housing to congestion.
Cool.
And then quickly, I wanted to talk about the different transit treatments. We've gotten a lot of questions and a lot of interest in this package and what it will do for transit. And as I noted before, we're making a significant investment in transit. We have transit proposed on almost all of the tiers. I would say Highway 212 /Sunrise is probably the only one that we're not proposing at this time significant transit, and that's because there's not the demand there. But for transit, there's a wide range of things. I mentioned the gold standard, and really I said BRT, but the gold standard is really a tunnel, right? It's really MAX, is the subway system. So here you see that gold standard articulated. Of course, we are proposing money for that, as well as light rail, which would be Southwest Corridor. But as you work your way, and I'm going opposite here from right to left, you start working down to different types of treatment. So the dedicated bus lane, also called BAT lane, is here right there where you have dedicated right away all the way through. That makes a huge difference. You also have strategically located areas where a bus can take a lane. And that's usually paired with transit improvements, transit signal improvements, also called TSP, or transit signal priority, which is there on the second to left. You see the little bus giving transit signals. It's cool.
Like a Wi-Fi signal coming in?
Yeah, no, the bus talks to the signal, and the signal says, oh, bus is coming. I'm going to go green or stay green. It's really cool. And we're proposing to fund a lot of that throughout the region, all the way to improvements in both kind of park and ride and the stations themselves. We heard a lot from the LIT members about wanting better stations, lighting in the stations, not pulling out to be more efficient. And so we're proposing those types of treatments. And this is important because we're hearing back from stakeholders that we want more transit everywhere, and we're trying to right-size the transit treatment, make sure that also there's a return on investment in that transit treatment depending on the area.
Right. Some of the feedback we've gotten so far from task force is, why can't every corridor have the gold standard? And part of what we're trying to do is have a conversation of, in some places, given density levels, given how much ridership you could create, the third from the left is the best investment at this moment in time. So that's the conversation we're going through with that body, and we'll be with it before you in a short period with the same kind of conversation.
Okay, so I think we've hit on most of these already. The major transit investments, Southwest Corridor, the second highest I would say is 82nd, and then TV Highway, followed by that is McLaughlin. There are other treatments that I would say are medium treatments, and that's 122nd, Burnside, 185th, Powell, and then, of course, for Central City, both Powell and Central City were really studying future high-capacity transit or tunnel. So just giving you examples of what the chart just showed. Any questions?
No. Sorry. I was saying the left side is gold standard.
Gold standard on the left.
Yeah. The bottom right is the ultimate gold standard.
The ultimate gold standard, right. Platinum. Maybe we need like a shiny
platinum.
Platinum. Yeah.
Sorry. I do have a question. I don't see reference to the C2C here specifically. I see you mentioned 181st.
First. Yeah, and that's a great, we could add that as well. We are proposing investment in transit on 181st. Not the entire C2C project, but that was not included on the slide. These are just examples.
Highlights, yeah.
Yeah, I know, for example, it has great opportunity out there for a transit signal priority, so that's something that we would be doing on Monday the 1st, yeah.
So a question that I've had, I know we're getting, I was monitoring the amendments that are coming in, and a lot of concern about C2C and also the Sunrise Corridor. So the question I have, so when we build new roads, so the C2C is really, some of it's new road. It's a road that doesn't exist right now. And so when we build new road, our standards are we add sidewalk, we add bike access, all those amenities. Mm-hmm. Do we have anything in our code that says we add transit amenities at the same time, like signal priority, just build it as part of the new system so as bus comes along, the system is already there, and you don't have to add it after the fact? Is there such a standard at this moment in our region?
So there's kind of a two-part question to that. So first, we do have our urban design guide called the Livable Streets Guide. You're going to formally adopt that in December. We have been using that as our kind of guidance throughout the technical workshops. I want you to know C2C, our partners, came in with a four-lane proposal with no complete streets, and we rejected immediately, and we highly recommended a two-lane proposal with complete streets, and partners Gresham and Clackamas County agreed to do so. So that project, in our eyes, has actually come quite far from when as it was first given to us. And then second, on transit, yes, we do have a component of our urban design guide on transit. Most of the treatments that I've discussed are for where you have either an existing line or you have a certain amount of ridership on that line. Right now, I'm not sure if we've had conversations with TriMet of whether they plan to extend service on the new roadway, but we could, and I think, you know, it's always good to plan ahead and plan for a transit stop and things like that. So I'll make sure to bring that back to the design team for that new connector.
Go ahead, Councilor.
It's my hunch that it will always be more cost-effective to make room for and provide the base infrastructure for the ultimate design that would support transit service, even if at the current time TriMet doesn't see enough ridership on a road that at best has development on one side of it, but will have development on both sides of it when Happy Valley continues its annexations and starts collecting system development charges from that annexation.
And I know for a fact, and we'll probably get into the 212 Sunrise conversation here, but I know for a fact that that's being done by Clackamas County for that project, is to get it transit ready. I'll have to follow up on C2C, but we'll make sure that we're working with Gresham and Clackamas County on
Thank
that.
Thank you. You just stated what I was trying to point. No, that was, I appreciate that, because I like that, transit ready. And I would love to see, and I recognize this is probably part of the RTP, or needs to become part of the RTP, that any new road construction has to be transit ready. We have standards for sidewalks. We have standards for bike lanes. It's time that our region steps up and says, okay, we've also prepared these new roads for transit ready. The thing about the C2C is I don't think there's been enough emphasis on the value and the role it will play with the airport. And you use Airport Way comes out, ends at Sandy Boulevard, and becomes 181st. Mm. And so I can see in the future, if that road is connected all the way to the Sunrise, that it really will be a very significant road to access to the Columbia Corridor and then also to the airport. And so right now it doesn't look like much. It isn't, it's not a road that's constructed yet. But it really has potential, and I want to make sure that we make those points to elevate its value, its future value in the region.
It actually downloads I-205, because what's going on right now is all those trips take either I-84 or 212 out to I-205, and then they go north-south, and then they come back in because they have no other way to access.
Exactly.
And
yes.
So it's a very out-of-direction travel and increasing our VMT, and it overloads I-205.
Thank you.
Yeah.
So anyway, I'm an advocate for transit-ready amenities in the future.
Okay. Just as a point on that, I don't know how long they've been trying to do this, but it may be time for us to just step up and do it in regards to transit ready. The part of all of the local RTPs have never included transit.
TSPs. Yeah.
Yeah, the TSPs. And now that we have HB 2017 requiring that each sub area have get ready for what their transit vision is, those should now be included into the TSPs. And then basic, what does it mean to have transit ready? Not just roadway, but land use components.
Yeah.
Well, not just the roadway, but
well,
the land use components.
We're expecting, and I'm looking over at my colleague, Carrie, here, we're expecting
it's
that...
It's been 20 years that TriMet's been trying to do this.
Yeah, we, and that has been flagged by our planners, but I think there's thinking amongst the planning department and the legal department that after the mobility plan is done, we're going to have to do some wholesale changes, and there's going to be kind of a big cleanup in terms of what our ordinance is and what we expect in TSPs, and working closely with DLCD on that. So we would add this to the list, I think, of things that needed to be done.
With guidance.
With guidance.
Yeah.
Okay. Also, and I might, the other thought I went to try to give this more teeth, and I'd have to talk with our attorneys, particularly Michelle, is whether we could add something in the adoption of the ordinance for the urban design guidelines to that effect, at least in terms of intent when you adopt it, to show that that was the intent of Metro Council. I don't think it has the same teeth as the TSP does, but
okay.
Well, we do have an urban development code in
Correct.
The Metro Code that we could amend at the same time so that we have not only clear guidance, but a regulatory framework for ensuring that...
Might be, not be able to get it done at the same time because of the track run to get the urban mobility. But we might be able to do it soon after.
Language,
soon after.
Carrie's group could put it into code.
We're looking at each other like, okay.
Okay.
we'll go ahead. Work on that.
At WCCC yesterday, TriMet mentioned that their service improvements for Line 20.
Mm-hmm.
So I wanted to ask how our capital investments and improvements on Burnside would complement TriMet's anticipated plans.
Yeah, Burnside, they complement each other very well. Burnside is a high ridership, high frequency ridership corridor, and we have mapped the service enhancements. In fact, that's when TriMet came, and we did map their service enhancement plans with Tier 1, and they completely overlap. There's already existing service or more service enhancements plans. We could continue to remap that. I know they're going through another round of service enhancements. I think it would be good for us collectively to be talking about how we're leveraging each other investments while Metro's investing in the capital of transit. TriMet continues to invest in the service enhancements. So we could tee that up for you.
Great. Yeah. And for me, transit highlights... I think it'd be helpful if we have the information in terms of what specific improvement trip time looks like. I mean, when we get to that stage, I know we've been working through the projects to identify exactly what a trip could look like right now versus once all of the projects are built out from point A to point B. I think would be really helpful for me, I think maybe for the council, for voters, people that want to be supportive of these investments.
Great. We'll get that.
Thank you.
Okay. Ooh, where'd we go back? Okay, and here's just some examples of safety and active transportation highlights. There are safety improvements on every Tier 1 corridor throughout all of it. This is really, you know, the backbone of our measure is making sure that we're saving lives and making sure that there is the basic infrastructure. In a lot of places on these corridors in Tier 1, there's missing sidewalks, there's missing intersection signals that should be there for pedestrian crossings. We're proposing crosswalks, rapid flashing beacons, lighting, other things that provide safe access. And we do include trails and off-street options as a complementary to many of these large arterials where it may not be safe to ride or walk. One example is the Alderwood Trail planning that's going to nicely complement the Airport Way project at 82nd and Airport Way. But I'm not going to walk through all of these individually. That's what's in questions.
Go ahead, Councillor.
Councillor Craddock, and then Councillor Stacey.
The trolley trail, which bridge are we talking about here? Is this the one at over the Clackamas River?
This, Gladstone.
Clackamas, yeah.
Yeah, Clackamas River. It's also, there's also a trolley trail proposal and the regional flexible funds for project development funds, so, which is not a problem at all. We could fund it twice. It needs money. Okay.
Oh, Councillor Stacey.
Thank you. Two trail proposals that I don't see up there are the, forgetting the creek name, Council Creek Trail from Hillsborough through Cornelius to Forest Grove. As I've had it described to me, following the alignment of the former Tillamook Railway, I guess it is, and the other, the North Willamette Greenway. If Councillor Chase were here, he would probably speak to that. There are components of that that I think have design plans.
Yeah. So I'll answer both of those. We spent a lot of time with our colleagues in parks talking about trails and talking about what would be included as part of a corridor and what would be included kind of separately, either in programs where there's overlap between the parks program and what we're being proposed as our program. Council Creek Trail is part of the TB Highway corridor. It would be directly parallel to it. We took that as it, we identified need out to the local investment team, and what we heard from them that was that it was more of a priority to do the safety investments, and if they had to choose, they would start with safe, you know, pedestrian safety investments before the trail. However, we have heard from the task force, as you know, they've put their own proposals that several people wanted to see that funded, and Councillor Gonzalez has actually made it pretty clear that he'd also like to see that funded. So I think that is one that is likely to probably be a part of the task force recommendations to include as part of the TB Highway corridor.
It was pointed out to me that the estimated cost range for that trail segment would just about max out the trails component of our
budget.
Measure.
Yeah.
So having another way to squeeze
fund it. And it's just a part two question. North Portland Greenway is not part of a corridor, but would be eligible, sections of it would be eligible for our active transportation and regional connections program.
Thank you.
Councillor Dirksen?
I was going to say, with regard to Council Creek Regional Trail, I was at, Councillor Gonzalez and I were at the Washington County Coordinating Committee meeting yesterday, and they spent a lot of time discussing their priorities for the next round of regional flexible funds, and that is Washington County's number one priority is the trail project, the Council Creek Regional Trail Project development. They're asking for about $1.35 million to move that project forward. So much like many of our Tier 2 corridors we've identified, we recognize that there's needs there, but the plans are not yet in place. So we're using other funding to move that project along. It may not be ready for funding from this measure.
The last thing I'll just note, and we got to keep moving here, is that because of the ODOT rail issues, it will come up high in the risk analysis. We have some major technical and political hurdles to get through to deal with the rail issues to make that trail happen. It's just a reality. Okay. Keep going.
Yep.
I think that switches to you. I can do it. And then we're kind of switching to programs, but I think it's important to talk about the programs. We're proposing 2% of each corridor's funding to go towards working with community partners. Really, this is a stable communities or anti-displacement effort to make sure that the communities stay in place and have development strategies to stay in place. If you're familiar with SWEDS, the strategy that complements the Southwest Corridor process, this would look very much like that. It would be run out of Malou's group in partnership with a project development agency.
I want to point out, we don't know of any other funding measure in the country that has taken an approach like this to try to address the effects of public investments that can raise values and trying to get ahead of the potential for displacement. So we should pat ourselves on the back for the SWEDS, the Southwest Corridor SWEDS process, and we're trying to replicate that good lesson in this funding measure.
And then I think somebody already asked a question about programs. Just want to remind people what they are. We will be back in spring. There's going to be a lot of both communication work and staff work with subject matter experts in each of these areas between now and March 1st is when we're working towards trying to get a draft staff recommendation on the programs and try to get a decision by April 1st is the dates we're using. But you'll see more about community outreach on these programs between now and then.
Mm-hmm.
Question?
Yeah.
Is there anticipated that in the program Future Corridor Planning that we would attempt to identify specific corridors in that program that would be funded?
I think we will look for your direction on that.
Yeah. The reason that I ask that and bring that up is the council will be receiving a letter from Washington County requesting that 3 corridors in Washington County be added to the Tier 1 list. Mm-hmm. But 2 of those 3 corridors, they're asking for funding for future planning.
Yeah.
So I'm not sure how that fits with Tier 1, Tier 2, whatever. But I think what their real goal is they want to have those corridors identified as being going to be addressed with future planning.
This is similar to the conversation we just had about trails. You know, I think you need to help us to guide the process of figuring out where are there places that we want to identify specific investments connected to corridors, and where are there places that you want to say, let's leave that for a program area to consider on a biennial basis in a grant program or something like that.
However, having a future corridor planning program leads us to a future second discussion, right?
Sure.
And I think that showing on a map the corridors that still need to be planned are just as important on that map as the corridors that get investment for an actual construction, right?
Yeah.
So I think it's pretty important that we really figure out how to weigh what we know today and some money for things that we don't yet foresee.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's a good idea.
Go.
Okay. Oops, did we get the other slide in here?
It's
okay. Let me just go to that.
After the presentation.
Okay. So we just talked about the corridor recommendations, and we talked about the programs, and I thought it would be helpful to take just a minute and talk about a way of thinking about this overall investment and the impact of this investment. So the measure in the current iteration of a preliminary staff proposal that's under discussion with the task force and coming to the council.
Asterisk, asterisk, asterisk.
That was at least 3. Is that we make $3.1 billion of capital investments in these Tier 1 corridors. And as you go across to the right, that would generate an additional $2.13 billion of leveraged funds for a total investment of $5.24 billion. Then you add in what we're expecting is around a $50 million per year set of programs over a 20-year calendar. That's about $1 billion of further investment in the region in that 20-year period, totaling to about $6.25 billion of investments. So we've had some media about the $3.1 billion. The Oregonian did a good story talking about a total of $5 billion. I think it's safe for us to now say we're envisioning a set of programs that would bring the total investment to $6.24 billion. In order, if we were bonding the $3.1 billion up front, it would require, and the $50 million, it would require a revenue stream of roughly $350 to $450 million annually for 20 years. And that's about a $7 to $9 billion stream of revenue. So part of what I wanted to do was demystify a little bit of some of the numbers that we've seen out and around. But we'll work on developing some further talking points for you all, but just thought it'd be helpful to display what we think the impacts of the proposal that's on the table today would be in a way that moves us away from just looking at the corridor proposed projects, layering in addition to the programs we're talking, to understand how robust an investment that this would be. Questions on that?
Yes.
Go for it.
So our ask, when we ask, would be for the 3.11 plus the 1 billion.
No.
So this is where we need to do a little more work with a set of folks to talk about what is the best way to talk with the voters about what this proposal is when it gets to the ballot. One way to discuss it would be to say we are asking to raise $350 to $450 million in taxes per year, mm-hmm, to make this investment, and not, mm-hmm, confuse people with it's $3 billion here, it's $2 billion there. But the ask is this amount of revenue annually, which is similar to the ask in the Parks measure, for example, of a $475 million bond. We know that in order to raise the property taxes to pay off that bond, it costs some additional funds over time, just like when you buy a home and you put a mortgage on it and you spend more than you've bought the home for. But we all talk about what the home value is, what the price of the home was. So the ask of the voters technically would be, are you willing to raise that much in taxes on an annual basis in order to fund this program of investments, which we think leverages these other benefits, et cetera, et cetera. So we'll work with you and consultants and others to figure out what's the best way to package that up to talk to the voters. We are, though, in the midst of this conversation with our task force about, is $3.1 billion in these corridors the right amount? And with a variety of partners, is $50 million per year in these nine buckets, and how does that layer out? Is that the right amount? So, and we're going to start next month and into January the conversation about what are the suite of tools available to us, how much can they legally raise, and what's the appetite for raising those revenues to match up with these investments. So it will continue to be a little complicated talking about what's in this Tier 1 bucket, what's in the program bucket, but I think it's safe to say we're talking about leveraging investments in the $6.25 billion range, and it's going to take us $350 to $450 million a year tax revenue to make these investments. Clear-ish?
Yeah.
Great. Okay.
I think it's a great start. I think to make it even more clear of what we would actually be asking the region versus what we'd be leveraging is that there's a column and a column.
Yes.
And they come together for a total at the end. Because the total revenue stream needed $7 to $9 billion, that becomes unclear again.
Yep.
I think you lose it. Like, it's all starting to come together, and then we lose it when we get there.
Well, that's covering financing costs.
Yes, mm, yes.
But it also includes the leveraged FTA.
Yeah, I mean, the challenge here is this is a much more complicated proposal we're putting together than a property tax bond.
Yeah.
That's a simple proposition to the voters. They understand that system. They understand how we talk about it. We're in somewhat new ground in putting together a measure with multiple sources that's funding different aspects. I wanted to make sure you understood the concept of how we're thinking about this, and we will continue to improve the design and also the talking points for you as we advance the revenue conversation.
Thank you.
I mean, just for example, when we go out to community and business groups and others, we're going to have to talk about how do we achieve that amount of revenue per year. That's the next conversation. Currently, we're talking to the task force about, is this the right amount of investments in these corridors? And we're beginning the conversation about, is this the right amount of investment in these programs? We'll be bringing those all together, but I wanted to start the process of trying to think about how this all looks. And we've done it literally today, thank you, Craig, in a quick slide to be able to talk with you about it. We will continue to work on that design.
Go ahead.
The twins over here. Yeah. Counselor Stacey can go first.
All right, so... Inevitably,
my junior colleague.
Thank you so much. If Councillor Lewis were here, she would ask me to defer to number one. This inevitably raises in my mind the consideration that I think we've all thought about a bit, which is whether we're doing one and done or we're establishing an ongoing program of investment for the region's benefit over time, and under what contractual arrangement with the voters we would do that. In the case of bonding, you have a limited term, you pay it off. But if we have ongoing revenue sources, perhaps going back to the voters for a check-in about how we've done and what the next round of investments would be, regardless of how we raise the money, might be a consideration. Is that going to be discussed by the task force as we go forward?
I would say that's more a question for you as a council.
Yeah.
Do you want to... So
I don't want to be one and done, I guess is what I'm saying.
I hear that. Again, this is different than a property tax bond.
Yeah.
Under law, under the Constitution, you may propose to the voters a property tax bond. It has to be time-defined, and it goes away once
right.
It's paid off. This could be an approach where you say, we want to ask the voters to enact a series of taxes for a suite of investments in transportation, and we're establishing a regional transportation investment program, and those taxes continue, and there's a structure to make ongoing investments. The question of bonding then becomes a tactic within the transportation investment program, not something that you're putting on the ballot. You could say we want to raise taxes for X period of years in order to achieve this specific program of transportation investments.
Or until a certain funding level is reached. There's a lot of different ways.
There are many ways to step into this, and it's, again, different territory than the property tax bond conversation. So there are a lot of options. And we will explore that full suite of options.
So I'm going to ask the question Lynn already asked. So what is going to be the annual amount of money that we're going to need to raise? Is it the $350 to $450?
Yes.
Yes.
Not the 7 to 9?
Per annum.
Well, so $7 to $9 billion is what is, after 20 years, an estimate of what you would raise in that period of time.
Okay. Make sure I have it correct in my mind.
And the main reason I put all these numbers up here is because you may have seen some of these in the newspaper when after we briefed the media and talked through what all and various newspaper outlets reported it in slightly different ways.
Sorry.
So I just want to get it on a sheet of paper so we can talk it through with you, and we'll continue to work to hone that how we talk about that.
Just commenting.
All right. Let's go back to the timeline coming up. So task force meeting tomorrow night. We're going to continue the dialogue. We have... amendments that have been submitted by about 9 task force members, some competing amendments, some very similar amendments, about 20 different proposals. Some of them were as simple as, let's include the trolley trail. We think that should be funded. Some are at cross purposes, increase funding for Sunrise, take Sunrise off the list.
Yeah.
All of what that was intended to do, the reason we asked task force members to bring us amendments, was to spur a conversation and sort of get them to talk about, this is why I think this project should be included. It meets these values. It promotes these outcomes. I think it shouldn't be included. I think it harms these values, harms these outcomes. Get that conversation going. A good chunk of why we want to do that is so we can bring that back to you so you understand the pros and the cons and can weigh those as you think about whether these specific projects and corridors should be included. Yes?
I just want to say on a positive note that looks like approximately 80% of the projects were unchanged. So let's celebrate that. So good job, task force. Good job, council. Good job, staff. That really, we really only have about 20% of projects at play. If you added everything they asked, so the adds, not the subtracts, to just add, it would be $0.7 billion. So it would be 3.8 package if you added all the whistles and bells that everybody wanted. And they really were whistles and bells. I want more trail here. I want more ETC there. Overall, I just want to make sure it was pretty pleased, pretty positive. We still have the controversial projects at play, which make up about 15% of the overall package.
Yep. So do we have a slide on that? On tier two.
No.
Let me just talk about Tier 2 so it's not confusing. So we focused on Tier 1 since June, July, did all the lit tours. We've been walking through with the task force in the last 3 meetings all the details about those projects. Staff recommendation came out. We're talking about that. They proposed amendments to add, subtract, modify. Tier 1 corridor projects. At the same time, over the summer, we asked jurisdictions if they wanted to advance a Tier 2 corridor to give us, to submit some information and some letters from partners and some other information so that we could begin to evaluate what the proposals on those Tier 2 corridors were. And we planned to, after finishing the conversation about Tier 1, after finishing the conversation about revenue, seeing where we are, bring the six proposals we got from local jurisdictions forward to the task force in the February timeframe, something around then. We'll have a better sense of, have we overshot the mark on revenue? Do we have more revenue than we thought we would? We'll have a better sense of that picture to be able to talk about these additional proposals. We did get six proposed Tier 1 corridors.
Five now.
We got five. I feel like the movie where they dropped the 15 amendment, you know. You know what I'm talking about.
Yeah.
So we'll bring those five forward. It is
three from Washington County, 217, Highway 226, and then the third one is 99W.
So 26, 217, 99W.
And then two from Clackamas County, 43, and the Willamette River Crossing Bridge, formerly known as OGLO.
So we'll continue to work with local jurisdictions on those to understand cost, risk, what engagement have they done, how do they match with the values, et cetera, and bring those forward later on, just to, so that there's not confusion about that, because I know some of the jurisdictions are talking about at WCC, the Tier 2, and that's caused a little confusion.
I think to make it even more clear that the way the task force has been operating, there is no movement from Tier 2 to Tier 1 in their eyes. It's whether it's included or not included. It would still be considered a Tier 2 and wouldn't get as fully funded all the way through construction, I think, is the way everybody's been. Is that the right way to?
I think you, at that point we could just ignore the tiers,
right,
and talk about what should be included in the measure. And
right,
then there's this quick tactical question of, do you include these as a corridor that we're investing in, or is there some identification in a preliminary way of what programs would get, what activities and programs would get,
yep,
funded in a list over the first couple cycles, or do we leave it for an application process in the future in a competitive program area?
Yep. Good.
Did we cover it all?
Are you good?
I think we're getting moving.
My hand going up.
But not quite up, so unknown. Okay,
sorry.
Councillor Stacey.
This is premature, but I want to be clear about where I'm coming from. Local participation and funding is extremely important to me in order to ensure equitable treatment of all our partners. Some are more ready than others. They have revenue sources already developed. Some have available revenue sources that haven't been planned in the form of adding projects to their capital improvement programs so that they can adjust system development charges and other revenue streams to include those investments. I want to make sure that we provide a welcoming space for our partners to keep projects in the program while developing their strategies for local participation, because it's not as if we're going to make simultaneous investments in every corridor immediately. But I want to be sure that I'm going to try my best to send as early as possible signals that our local government partners who own the facilities or will own the facilities share responsibility with the region to make investments at some level to partner. And some will need time to plan that, but that shouldn't disqualify them from having a corridor in the planning process and in the measure.
And I think you just opened the door for me to thank all of our partners. They are putting an incredible amount of staff time towards this, which is incredibly amount, lot of money, right? When you have mechanical engineers, traffic engineers, planners all working on this, for every single corridor, we have multiple project leads. So say TB Highway has a lead from Washington County, has a lead from Beaverton, has a lead from ODOT. Project teams are meeting every week. So I just want to make sure you know that's already happening to some extent. I think that's not quite your point. I mean, I think your point is some partners have more ability to do that than others. But the partner
capital contribution as well as,
yes,
the staff.
Yes, as well as the cap. I just want to say the staff contributions, for those who can make a staff contribution, they're making a huge contribution right now. But I appreciate your comment. Some don't have the ability to make a capital contribution as well, and you're saying give them the room to do that, I think.
Yeah, give them time to develop the tools and deploy them.
Yeah, thanks.
Which is different. And I think we should be very clear. I don't want to gloss over that. I'm not agreeing to it in any way, shape, or form because we're not having that conversation right now. But I, what you're asking for is that if you don't have the tools, that you show your plan to get tools.
Yeah. Hmm. Yeah.
And that, like a match. You're talking about
a route to a match. So if you have, you know, a system development charge for transportation, you may not be including transit project investment in that SDC that you levy. So you might want to change your capital improvement program to add those.
However, all that number will change is the amount that was leveraged, because the amount that goes in is the amount that will get spent once it's in the measure.
Yeah. You bet.
Right? I mean, we don't take money. We wouldn't take taking money away if it was less than.
The money can wait once depending on the revenue measures that we adopt. We want to make sure that the regional investment is there, and the communities can
respond once it goes out, and we say there's $150 million for this corridor.
We're not going to spend it somewhere else.
Right.
Yeah.
So it would leverage more money into the corridor, so it would go into column B, not column A.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. Councilor Gonzalez, and then we're going to close.
Yeah. One last question. Since I've never been a part of a $7 to $9 billion, you know, local measure.
The rest of us have many times, of course.
Just want to be vulnerable, you know, opening that space with my peers.
You're innocent until tomorrow.
I'm innocent until tomorrow. Thank you, Councilor. The number of $350 to $450 million spent per year, obviously it feels like a significant undertaking if the measure is to pass. So in the accountability and oversight section, can we expect to see what our plan is to obviously scale up workforce or construction capacity for the region to do almost half a billion dollars of projects year after year after year? What does that kind of logistical implementation look like after we take these plans and actually apply them in a short time span?
So the revenue stream we think that's likely required assumes a significant chunk of project funding is bonded up front. So we would be spending a large share of the money in the first 5 to 7 years. Mm-hmm. Advancing Southwest Corridor, advancing other major corridor investments.
That are already completely planned.
That are planned out. We have the finance plan for them. We are awaiting the various components of local match to leverage the federal funding to launch construction. We know that the Southwest Corridor project is what projected to be 23,000 jobs by itself over a roughly 7 year period to get to full build out on that project. So, you know, we would need to be bonding a very significant portion so that revenue stream on an annual basis doesn't reflect the spending on an annual basis. We would spend the lion's share of these resources up front. The one stream we know we're proposing would be an ongoing annual source of funding is the $50 million for programs. Because we're talking about bonding, if you think about like a property tax bond with our housing bond, for example, we bond that all up front and we're working to spend it in the next 5, 7, 8 years. So the remainder of the time, you're just paying off that debt with that revenue source. So it might actually be even more challenging than what you're suggesting.
Yeah.
We would be spending more than $500 million in that first half a decade or decade of time.
Yeah, I think you doubled down on Councilor Gonzalez's point, which is that huge amounts of spending in the first 5 to 7, let's call it 7 to 10, will require significant oversight, scaling up of the local workforce. We won't be managing all those projects. In fact, we'll probably be managing very few of them, but making sure that capacity is out there is going to be really key for the success of this.
But I think an underlying question that Councilor Gonzalez was asking is, are we confident that if we have this funding source in place, does the workforce exist to do that work in the timeline that we're talking about?
I want to come back to this topic. It's a big topic. It comes back to the potential conversations that we need to have around PLAs and community benefit agreements, because we can then talk about what our goals are for local versus out-of-state hire. Not that we'd set a goal, but we could put a local priority first. But we will be attracting people from outside to come in, and do we have a local priority? We should have a local priority, right? But there are more than enough jobs here to get through a local priority and then go out. But we will be competing nationwide for the same people even then. So, but it would be nice to keep our people home rather than having them go out state, which is what's happening now. So can we... We're going to put a close to this conversation and move on. But I think it is one of the topics we need to come back to as soon as possible, because I know, Andy, you're starting to think about setting up conversations about what to include in those conversations.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Good work. Thank you, everybody.
Thanks very
much. This is the culmination of a lot of work and a lot of thought and negotiation. So thank you.
More to come. Yes.
Thank you for keeping it, the risk management side of it for us, Margie. All right, I'm going to kick this over to Andy to do this quick presentation, and I am going to go do something I need to do. Where's Counselor Stacy going?
Paper.
Oh, okay. I just need to run out and do one thing, and I'll be right back.
Okay.
Okay.
You bet. So, next item, the Visitor Facility Intergovernmental Agreement. So I wanted to just give a brief overview of the VFIGA, which is scheduled to be considered on Thursday. I think you know this, but I'll just run through. The Visitor Facility Intergovernmental Agreement is an agreement between the City of Portland, Multnomah County, and Metro in partnership with our travel industry. It dates back to the early 2000s when really, this region did a historic thing that's been replicated in other jurisdictions across the country, but it was relatively new. Put together this intricate agreement between three different governments. At the time, it was to fund expansion of the Oregon Convention Center and also to stand up a series of programs to bring tourism, additional tourism and group business to the Portland region. It was intended to bring resources as people come here and stay in hotels and eat at our restaurants and shop in our local businesses and often even rent a car and go out and see other parts of Oregon, up to Mount Hood. I think we've told stories in past presentations about what was the story? The folks up at Mount Hood knew when there'd just been a convention in town because the people with the little red hats all showed up. Up at Mount Hood together, or the there suddenly were four people together singing together because they were at a singing conference. So the impacts, we know the impacts of the conventions we hold here are felt outside of the Portland region in wine country at the coast up at Mount Hood. So tourism, the point is just that tourism is an important part of our economic fabric. I think the estimate is that $5.3 billion was spent in Portland in 2018 by visitors to the Portland area, and the industry employs more than 115,000 Oregonians. So a very important economic component of our local economy, and the VFIGA supports that by investing in the facilities, the cultural, the arts, the sports facilities, and invests in deliberate promotion of the Portland region to get folks to pay attention to Portland. So that first agreement was established in 2001, and it survived both the horrific terrorist attacks in 2001. That financially had a huge impact on tourism economies across the country, but the structure of it was sound enough to survive that event. It also survived the deep recession of 2008-2009 without affecting our ability to expend the resources and to pay back bonds on the sets of bonds that we'd issued to date. So in 2013, the three parties, in partnership with the travel industry, updated and amended the intergovernmental agreement, largely for the purpose of ensuring that we could establish a new funding priority to pay back revenue bonds and invest in the Convention Center Hotel. We added a couple other, we tweaked the system and added a couple other priorities, and we're about to see that hotel open and begin to hold business groups there and conventions groups there. It seems like almost immediately we began talking about the next round of changes to the Visitor Facility Intergovernmental Agreement. And in 2018, the mayor of Portland, the chair of Multnomah County, and the council president at the time agreed to four sort of priority areas for another round of changes to the VFIGA. And those were to make further investments in our cultural facilities that support the tourism industry in Portland, to put more resource into attracting group business. With the hotel opening, we're becoming an even more attractive place to come, and so we need additional resources to attract those groups to come in and spend the resources that then create the fund in, or support the fund in the first place. A relatively new priority of working to address chronic homelessness in the downtown area that is a humanitarian challenge, but also is something that's affecting tourism and affecting the businesses that rely on tourists. And then lastly, to ensure that we have adequate revenues in our reserves to continue to withstand potential future downturns of the economy. And most important from the point of view of having strong reserves is that we ensure we can pay off the debt that has been put into the what we call the bucket system.
And the solution is simple and elegant.
Oh, yes. Sorry. I thought you were pointing the pictures here. Yes. It is a very elegant solution.
Not simple, though.
So the way the structure works, I think you know, the revenues from hotel motel taxes, which are the top area, so we do call this the Pac-Man chart, because you see Pac-Man up on the top left. The hotel motel revenues are split into these different categories. The red box there is 2.5% rate on hotel and motels in the Portland area in Multnomah County. The portion that's in the city of Portland goes into what we call the bucket system on the right-hand side. In addition, 2.5% of motor vehicle rental tax also gets put into that bucket system. And the revenues flow down through each of these buckets all the way down to the bottom. So the first priority, it gets the first cut at resources, the second priority, the next cut, and so on. And we've structured this deliberately so that the first priorities are always repaying bonds, and so bondholders can see they get the first dollars in. If there's any economic downturn, the buckets at the bottom will lose resources, and you get this reverse waterfall back up. We've only actually had, I believe, 1 year in which not all of the program priorities, so the priorities what are now 6 through 15, got 100% of the funding that we projected. And I believe in that year it was something around a couple hundred thousand dollars or less than a couple hundred thousand dollars that was short. And I believe that was around the time of the terrorist attacks in 2001. So a very severe impact on tourism. Beyond that, we have structured a system that's survived very well. So let me run through. We have already three continuing bond repayments, the convention center expansion, the stadium bonds, which from the Civic Stadium back before it was just the Timber Stadium, the convention center hotel, obviously. And we are proposing adding two new bonding buckets, one for the Veterans Memorial Coliseum, one for Portland's five centers. Each of those are proposed at up to a $40 million bond. And those would come on at certain points in time, so the city would be allowed, I think it's in no sooner than 2021, to issue a bond for VMC, and no sooner than, I think it's 2023, or 2024, a bond for P5. And then going on down, we maintain the convention center operating bucket and maintain the ability for the convention center to make additional requests for funding to ensure its budget is whole. It is the bulwark of this whole system. Bringing groups to town is the majority of how we attract folks and get what they call, quote, heads in beds, people staying in hotels, coming from Iowa, New Jersey, and New York, and spending their resources here. So making sure we have the resources we need to shore that up. Why'd I pick those three? Don't know. A variety of places. Florida, too. The next bucket is both a continued bucket. There was a bucket that was for Multnomah County, and we've increased the amount of money in that bucket, and it escalates with CPI going forward. And then it is connected to the 14th bucket, which is an additional livability bucket for the county. So those two operate together, and each year there is an additional amount of money to ramp up the amount that we're spending on addressing homelessness to get to $5.25 million per year in the fifth year of the of this agreement. That makes sense.
Between the two of them combined?
Between the two of them combined, it would be $2.5 million total this year, this current fiscal year, $2.5 million the year after that. It ramps up to, I think, 3.2 and 3.7 and eventually gets to $5.2 million in the fifth fiscal year. And then it continues to grow based on consumer price index, the way we've defined that in the agreement, as do most of the other buckets.
Madam President?
Yeah.
I take it, Andy, that it's very likely that bucket 7 will fill every year and overflow, but that the shortfall might occur in the...
Well, let's get to that.
Sorry.
Yeah, that's okay.
Sorry.
Let me just run through this. I want to bounce back up to convention center passes, visitor transit passes. We have updated that that bucket and the approach in that bucket to be a straight allocation with the new Hop Pass card that TriMet uses. We have a better sense of how much usage is occurring, so that allows us to fund passes for convention participants when they stay here, which is actually a more rich program than we had with the Fairless Square. This used to contribute to Fairless Square, but when that went away, we established a transit pass program. It's now, we're updating it to reflect the use of hop cards. The next bucket, the number 10, the Visitor Development Fund, we are beefing that the investment in that bucket up to ensure we have the kind of resources we need to continue attracting convention groups. Convention business is a very competitive business across the country. Travel Portland and the VDF board that manages these funds, which is travel industry folks and the three representatives from the three different governments, look at requests for support to bring conventions to town, and they have ramped up the expectation of return on investment. We used to require a 25% return, or sorry, a 25-to-1 return on investment. So for every dollar invested from this fund, we'd expect 25 times economic impact in the region. We're now up to 40 times return on investments.
Might be higher now.
And in some, I think even in some seasons, we go a bit higher. So we're denying resources for groups to come here because we're a competitive place. But it also means that we are running out of revenue. So this is one of the four areas of focus from the leadership that we were directed to pursue, which is really making sure we're investing in marketing, attracting conventions to come to town. Dropping on down now to a new bucket for Portland Expo. This would start at just a little over $500,000 per year. This is a new bucket. It's about the same amount that we've been funding P5 operations support and Rose Quarter facilities support for the past since we amended the agreement back in 2013. And the last one, which may be new for you, is number 15. This is a reimbursement bucket up to $250,000 to cover the costs of the city's new tax collection system. I believe it's an automated system they put together. They expect will make the collection of taxes more efficient and more accurate. And all tax collection processes need to pay some share of the cost of putting that system in place. So we're adding that into here. I think we expect it will cost less on an annual basis than the $250,000, but that's a capped amount, and it's a reimbursement basis. We've then established two new reserves. So we've got the restricted reserve is set at a certain proportion of all the program funding. So in any year, we expect to have coverage of 1 year of that of those program buckets, and that's meant to guard against downturns. Then, assuming we have that reserve established, we would put $2 million into the strategic reserve. That reserve is there so that if there's a group we want to attract to town, we tried to steal away from Utah the outdoor retailers convention. It's a very, very large event. We needed upfront resources though to pledge in order to make application be competitive to bring them to town. So this is a resource that is intended to be drawn on in the event of a large event that we need to have immediate resource to be able to tap. The Visitor Development Fund would be responsible for analyzing requests for use of that strategic fund, and it could be filled on a slower basis. It doesn't have to be filled the year after. So if we're in a year where there are tight times, we could access that fund and say, let's fill it up over the next 5 years, rather than having that somehow cause harm to the buckets above. And then any additional resources beyond what's in the restricted reserve, beyond what's in the strategic reserve, would fall into this general reserve, and they would be available to cover costs. If all's well and we've got plenty of resource in that last reserve, we tap $1.5 million out of the strategic reserve, it would fill up from that general reserve the following year. So that's the general summary of the new buckets and how the system works. We've got a lot of new priorities here. We've got a lot of things we're trying to achieve amongst the collection of governments and travel industry. So the concern would be if we hit a year where we're having worse than anticipated impacts in the tourist economy, what happens? If no action was taken, the reverse waterfall, as we call it, would occur. So you wouldn't get enough money flowing all the way down to the bottom. And if there are resources in the restricted reserve, you would spend those resources to cover shortfalls until you ran out of money. And then the bottom bucket, and then the next bucket up, and then the next bucket up would start to lose resources until they lost all their resources and hit the next bucket and so on. The forecasts that we have done of the expected kind of recession that most economists seem to be predicting over the next couple few years, we believe this system will survive. We may not have all the resources that we expect in the restricted reserve. That's what that reserve is there for. It's in the instance in which we have a much deeper than anticipated recession. We've also run sort of worst case scenarios. And in that instance, we would have shortfalls in some of the buckets, pretty significant shortfalls in 1 or 2 years in the kind of forecast that our forecasters call sort of a worst case scenario. So we established some governance structures to be able to intervene. We could just say the bottom couple buckets are going to lose some money for 1 year, and we could make an affirmative decision to let that happen. Or if the financial review team, which is identified in the IGA, it's the three chief financial officers from the three governments, if they are looking forward out 5 years and they determine we're going to have insufficient funds to cover a significant proportion of what we want to cover, that we should actually intervene. And the idea would be they could pick from a menu of different choices. They could say, we've got a scheduled increase in a couple of these buckets. Let's delay that scheduled increase. They could say, let's delay escalations, that CPI increase, for all of the buckets. And they can't pick out any particular bucket, but every bucket gets treated the same. Or in a really bad scenario, let's cut all the funding. Let's do those first two and cut all the funding for buckets 10%, 12%, some amount that helps us stave off the worst impacts of a potential recession. They could also recommend delaying the initial issuance of one of those two bonds if they're not yet. If they're issued, we're repaying them. We're not going against that bond covenant. So the financial review team would make that recommendation. The Visitor Development Fund, which is this board that already governs the Visitor Development Fund, would make a decision based on that recommendation. And they could similarly only choose from that menu of options. So everyone, there's a fair treatment across all the buckets of stepping into how we intervene and deal with a shortfall. There is the option of any one of the governments could appeal a decision that's made in that VDFI board. And there's a dispute resolution committee, which would be the three heads of the three governments that would make a determination as a result if there were a dispute. Those folks also sit on the VDFI board, so it's hard for us to imagine a situation in which they're involved in that conversation, the VDFI board, and still dispute it to this dispute resolution committee. I'm trying to think about anything else to describe about the agreement coming to you on Thursday, but those are the highlights.
I have two questions. The previous Metro Council approved an updated IGA in December of last year. The city and county did not follow through and approve it because they, apparently the county, expressed concerns. How does this IGA that we're considering differ from the one that we approved in December?
I should have covered that. This council, the previous council,
that's
did indeed.
That's question number one.
Okay.
Question number two is, in the staff report, it indicates that the county has subsequently approved the IGA. It does not say what the city's position is at present.
Great. So Metro Council adopted a version of the Visitor Facilities IGA last December, and the county raised concerns about some elements of the governance structure. We had ongoing discussions throughout 2019 to try to address those concerns. Then in the summertime, this need to fund the integrated tax cost recovery system at the city arose, and so we added that to the discussions. I believe we are now at a place where all three parties agree on the governance structure, on the funding buckets, on the amounts, and on the language that's in the version before you. The county did adopt an earlier version of this in September, and there were a couple areas where they didn't update language in the VFIGA. So, for example, the fiscal years were pulled out of last year's agreement, so they were the wrong fiscal years. So there's a few areas where we needed to make updates. There was a few areas where the city and Metro attorney recommended streamlining some of the language based on the new agreed-to terms between the three parties, and then we needed to add this integrated tax recovery bucket, which wasn't a part of what the county adopted. My understanding is that all three governments now support the language that's in the version that we're bringing to you on Thursday.
So the differences are in the account sequence, the addition of the integrated tax system recovery is new.
That's one. And then how the governance structure works.
Right, and how the governing board would address certain issues.
Basically,
and when.
Basically picking from a menu,
yeah,
of choices, so everyone knows what are the options for intervening and making cuts. It's not a mystery. I think one of the concerns was, you know, would two governments make a decision that the other government felt was detrimental to them to manage a downfall? And in this case, if they're pulling the trigger of intervening and making cuts, the cuts affect everybody.
I'd like to make a statement, and you've heard me say this before. The hoteliers have been really supportive of this, and particularly with the support of homeless people, the county giving more support to the homeless people. The challenge is they do also want to see that there is fewer homeless people in downtown, and what this doesn't include is that kind of commitment to that. And I'm not going to ask that we modify this or do anything different, but I just want to make sure and just say that, is that the weakness I see in this is that the county will have more resources available to work with homeless people, but there's no specific commitment that they've made in what will be different about homeless people in downtown Portland. To me, that's
a guarantee outcomes.
Pardon me?
It's hard to guarantee outcomes.
It is. I recognize that, but it's...
So another element of the agreement that's new from the current agreement is that all parties, every party that receives a funding allocation, annually report on the uses of those funds and performance around a set of metrics that are to be developed in the use of those funds. So we're trying to set up a process where we can all review one another's uses of these resources and see how we're succeeding or where we need to do better.
I'd like to ask that we receive that information at pertinent times.
Yeah, Councillor Stacey.
Thank you, Madam President. I just want to congratulate you, Andy, you, Ashley, everybody who worked to support you in this process. This was, to put it mildly, trying, contentious, and frustrating for a very long time, and I'm very pleased to see it resolved in as amicable a way as possible, and that we've achieved our objectives in the matter.
I second that. Councillor Chase.
Well, I
Really appreciate it. It's been a long, ongoing, a lot of work amongst all the other things you do. I don't know how you manage it all.
For the transportation.
It's like a magic act. So I'm really happy to see this, you know, going forward. I agree with Councillor Craddock in that it is hard to quantify how this will really relieve some of the, you know, homeless issues in our urban areas, and to measure that. Nevertheless, I think it is something that will that the intention of the county, I believe, is to, you know, utilize it along with permanent supportive housing. And if there is a way for us to articulate, one, you know, getting communication back about it, I think that's a really good idea. And I think if there's a way for us to articulate the importance of those resources supporting permanent supportive housing, and in particular, we have our housing bond strategy, which has a tremendous number of those units are the very low-income units. And these resources, my strong hope is that these resources are going to be supporting those units and creating the permanent supportive housing, which gives people an alternative to living and camping on the streets. That is the fundamental, you know, one of the fundamental components of permanent supportive housing. And so, of course, that's a regional strategy and a regional challenge. And how that gets targeted towards downtown or other parts of the region, I think, is a very difficult component of measuring it. But it does contribute to that overall strategy that I think we're really doubling down here on at Metro, and I think this is a way for us to help support that. I think we can learn as we go by getting some of that information back. So I think that's really an important comment. And so I want to make sure I'm understanding is, so in terms of the city and county, well, I guess the county passed it in September. The differences we're talking about are essentially some correcting some language, housekeeping language, adding, more significant is adding the integrated tax system cost recovery. That was not in the counties, but I think that is correct. An important component, and I think rightly sounds like it should be in there. Was there a change in the governance structure from what the county passed?
No.
To what we're, okay, so.
No, the change in the governance structure came in the discussions between December of last year when Metro Council adopted one version and what we were working on over the summertime. You know, in August and September, we came to some agreements about the decision-making process, and I think the great work of Ashley and the attorney at the city in the last couple months has been, how are we ensuring that governance structure is fully crafted correctly and in a way that flows through the whole agreement? Because all these things are interconnected with one another. And then how are we describing accurately in the last part of the agreement, which is an attachment, direction to the financial review team, or describing accurately what we're instructing those financial review team members to do based on the agreement that we've reached. And so it was a matter of time in crafting that language as clearly as possible, so no one later on had, you know, took issue with, well, that over there says this, this says this, and I think we're all there now.
Well, I just, again, I want to thank you. I want to acknowledge that, you know, in December I did vote against the proposal because I didn't feel, you know, I wanted to have the county on board, and I know that's a tremendous amount of work that happened going forward and getting all of that together, but I really feel good about where you're landing here and just want to share that.
And just for clarification, this is for how many years?
This would be in perpetuity until and unless the three parties decide collectively to amend, change, and yes, some of the bonds get paid off at certain points in time. We have put in place language that says let's revisit, let's develop a strategic plan, and I believe we put in there 2026. Any party thereafter could request, and the parties would agree to begin the process of strategic planning. It does feel like we're on a cycle now of, as we pay some bonds off and new priorities arise, And the amount of resources that do come in, because we've done a really good job in attracting folks to come to town, and the number of hotels that get built, it does feel like there could be resources that we want to figure out what to do with. If we're lucky, we have a problem where the last reserve bucket is getting overloaded with resources, and we have to decide what to do. If we're unlucky, then we're trying to figure out how do we make cuts.
Okay. All right. Any further comments? Again, thank you. And look forward to finalizing this. I will be appearing before City Council tomorrow at Portland City Council in support, just for FYI.
So the City Council is scheduled to act tomorrow. We have you scheduled to consider on Thursday. The county's saying they're going to consider the first couple weeks of December, and then the IGA would be fully adopted. The county then does need to follow on and update their tax code to reflect the new set of amendments here. And that would probably happen in 2020 sometime.
And we're expecting Mayor Wheeler to be able to make it on Thursday. All right. Thank you. Mr. Scott.
Thanks. Two really quick items today. One, just an update on the community campaign, which I talked about before. We're a little more than halfway through the campaign. Departments are putting on different events in order to generate engagement and interest among staff. I do want to note we're down a little bit, so we're trying to ramp up a little bit the communications and get people excited about this campaign. So along those lines, we have some opportunities for you to participate and for all of the Metro employees to participate. There's an online auction item preview, so we'll be doing an online auction, and it's your chance to view all of the items before you bid very large amounts on them. And that is Wednesday, November 20th from 9 to noon down here in the lobby. We're also going to be having a Council CO Office book and bake sale. I'm sure you're all bringing cookies and books in to sell. That is also on Wednesday from 9 to noon, also in the lobby. And then Pez is putting on a Pezzerts ticket sale. Desserts are prepared by members of the Pez department staff, raffled off on Monday, November 25th, the week of Thanksgiving. They're raffled off the week of Thanksgiving. The ticket sale's on Thursday, November 21st. So a few items coming up.
Do we have books we want to donate? When do we bring them?
Things to donate for the auction are due by the end of the day today. Yes.
But for the book and bake sale?
Yeah, for the online auction item preview. Take book sale item. No, I think those are by the end of the day as well. But, if you brought something in tomorrow, we could make it work. Yeah, I promise. The other thing I wanted to note today...
pickup truck I can...
If you've got a lot of books, we'll figure out how to get them in. I promise.
They're not that valuable.
Today was an employee appreciation lunch. I think it's the first one I've missed since I've been here, and it was the largest one we've ever had with 19 employees. I had another lunch engagement today, but 19 employees representing 220 years of service. So thanks to Councilors Dirksen, Craddock, Chase, and Stacy for attending today. I hope it was great, and I hope it didn't go too much past 1 o'clock. But it's kind of exciting to have those opportunities, and congratulations to those 19 employees.
Fortunately, the cloture rule is imposed only on most of the counselors. So. Surely spoken on behalf. Thanks.
Those are the items for today. Thanks.
We may start getting more and more as 5 years ago, what was our staff level 5 years ago versus 10 years ago?
Right.
And
I thought it was interesting there were quite a few park people that were brought on with that first levy, because they were all their work was focused on the 2013 levy.
Right.
Funny. You can see that.
Yeah, exactly.
Whips.
Right. 5 years from now, we may see as we bring new folks on for the bond. So that's it.
Councilor Communications.
I have one item.
Go ahead, Councilor Craddock.
So last week, the Oregon Zeus Bond Citizen Oversight Committee met, and the bond projects continue. This is the 2008 bond, $125 million. It's on track. Here we are in 2019. Two can be completed on time and within budget. And it will be complete in the first 10 years of the... And so when complete, the first 10 years of the 20-year zoo master plan will be finished. So the primate forest, the rhino habitat, and the cafe will be opening in 2020, next year. Polar Passage and event space will be opening in winter of 2021. So they still have, they're still within the range of the 10% contingency. So pretty darn good for that many years ago. It's remarkable. The Bond Oversight Committee is also working on, let me back up. They made some recommendations to staff and asked them to report back, and this was in the 2018 report. There were 25 recommendations that the committee made. Staff has now responded to 22 of those recommendations and are on track to complete all 25 by the end of this year. So that's, I think that's pretty darn good, too. Polar Bear update, Amy Cutting has been a curator. She has been working with professional colleagues with the U.S. federal agencies, AZA accreditation, AZA Polar Bear Species Survival Plan, advisory teams and professionals with the Association of Zoos and Aquarium to develop placement protocols for polar bears, especially those coming from bear-human conflict. As you may know, we have an Endangered Species Act at this moment. We don't, animals don't cross international lines. There are lots of polar bears available in Canada, but at this moment, there's no way to bring them in. So they're working on a plan. The Polar Passage team has several members who are Arctic ambassadors, and Amy is helping to lead this Polar Bear Research Council to develop a polar bear research plan, and this will give us those opportunities to bring bears into the U.S., and particularly at our zoo. So I'm very impressed. This is pretty significant work and something to be really proud of. They reported that there are now 2.5 million followers on the Oregon Zoo social media sites. That's more than any other public, it's just huge. It's just remarkable. And then, but they did announce that Grant Spickelmeyer is leaving. He's our education director. He's just a really talented man. He's been recruited by the Wolf. I don't remember. Do you remember the name of the organization? Yeah. It's an international wolf group in Minnesota.
Yeah.
And it's 20 miles from his mother's house.
Oh. It's in the middle of nowhere.
Yeah.
He's the best.
Yeah. So what? It's awesome. Yeah, he's from Minnesota, and this will take him back home. He's been remarkable, and I'm sorry this is leaving.
My brother used to do this. Thank you, Councilor Craig.
Got us talking about wolves now. Go ahead, Councillor Stacey.
Thank you, Madam President. On behalf of the PES, or Solid Waste Liaisons, I want to note that there'll be two sets of actions at Thursday's meeting. First, on the consent calendar, we'll be approving six non-system licenses for companies whose sustainability policies include a commitment not to landfill any waste, and so they receive special permits to transport their waste to the Covanta burner north of Salem. Their judgment being it's better to burn waste than bury it. No comment. How do I do that? Oh, yeah. Second item. We have a list of designated facilities where solid waste from the metro region is permitted to be disposed. About 2016, the Metro Council adopted by ordinance a landfill capacity policy, which declares that because the region has more than a century of disposal capacity at the designated landfills in Eastern Oregon and Eastern Washington, that the region would no longer make solid waste disposable from the region at facilities that are newly permitted or who have expansions permitted because we have enough places to dispose. As a consequence of that ordinance, the Riverbend landfill in Yamhill County was removed from the eligible disposal facilities. That's a waste management facility. Since the time of our ordinance and removal of it from our working list, waste management has suffered a crushing defeat at the Supreme Court for its proposal to expand the Riverbend landfill. The city of McMinnville has voted to withdraw its solid waste disposal from Riverbend and have it shipped elsewhere at some 10% increase in fees because they don't want that landfill to expand. And I've communicated with waste management, and I think they no longer have an objection to the winding down of that facility. They continue to receive waste from other small communities in Yamhill County, and will probably be reserving the remaining capacity for that purpose. So this would amend the facilities list that exists somewhere in our documentation to remove Riverbend as one of the designated facilities. Oh, and there may be some Yamhill County residents who advocated for the closure or the removal of our waste stream from Riverbend who will appear to congratulate us on this ordinance. That will not be on the consent agenda.
Correct. Anybody else? All right, just a heads up, nothing specific to make sure you've got on your calendars, but we have several trainings that we were talking about that we will be requesting some of your time. We'll try and keep it, as I heard from Councillor Lewis, to the Tuesdays and Thursdays when you guys are already in here.
Good idea.
So it's not cumulative on top of that. But there's a transportation-focused media training that we will start seeing. It's on the calendar. I can't remember. December 18th?
Tuesday, December 10th.
Yeah. There is a training with Dr. Stephen Holt on basically the experience of being black in Oregon and Portland. We have not scheduled that, but it's upcoming. Again, we will not be looking for hours and hours of training, and in some cases we'll be breaking up the training, so it's not all at once, which is the case with the OMA trainings that Carrie's proposing a series.
Will be lawyers?
Yes. By the end of it, we will all be certified in some way, shape, or form to better take care of our records and ourselves. There will be a certification with a little...
A certificate.
A little certificate, yes. Those are the three big ones I know of right now and topic-wise, but we'll keep you updated. We're trying to figure out a better process for when these things are asked in great quantities of time from the council. Trying to manage that. With that, I don't have anything else. We are adjourned.